Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Podcast. I'm your host, Frances O'Rourke Dowell. Hi, and welcome to the Quilt Fiction Podcast. I'm Frances Dowell, author of Friendship Album 1933 and the story you're about to hear. Thanks for tuning in. If you're enjoying the Quilt Fiction Podcast, be sure to like the Quilt Fiction Facebook page and consider joining our closed Facebook group, the Quilt Fiction Club, where we talk about books, quilts, quilt history, and pie. It's a warm and welcoming group, and we'd love to have you. Also, if you haven't signed up for my newsletter yet, hop over to quiltfiction.com and get your name on the list. That way you won't miss any news about new episodes, new books, and giveaways. Speaking of books, as the holidays approach, I want to remind you that books make great gifts. You can buy my quilting novel, Birds in the Air, and my story collection, Margaret Goes Modern, via various online booksellers, or you can order them from your favorite brick-and-mortar bookshop. If you have kids in your lives, I've got loads of books for them, too. Learn more about my children's fiction at francesdowell.com. Thanks so much for listening. And now, a Thanksgiving story. Enjoy. Turkey in the Straw, Bess, 1925, a friendship album story. It always took Bess a moment to recover from one of her mother's missives, and today was no different. After carefully refolding the note and slipping it back into its envelope, she closed her eyes and sighed. Everything is going to be fine, she told herself, absolutely fine. I hope that wasn't bad news, Mrs. Johnson, Bess's housekeeper, said from the sink where she was washing the breakfast dishes. I suppose it's not, Bess said, but her tone was less than convincing. My mother has written to let me know that she and my father will be joining us on Thursday for Thanksgiving dinner. They're more than welcome, of course, but to be perfectly frank, Mrs. Johnson, my mother and I don't always see eye to eye. Well, I think that's true of a lot of mothers and daughters, don't you? Especially nowadays, when things are changing so fast. Mrs. Johnson reached for a dish towel and began to dry the oatmeal pot. With your parents coming, how many people does that make? Another sigh from Bess. 13. Bill's brother Frank and the boys are coming. Frank's wife, Wilma, is going to Cincinnati. Her father is ill, and she feels it best to go by herself. And Annie informed me last night that she's invited her friend Molly Snyder and Molly's brother. Mrs. Snyder has broken her arm, so the family's being farmed out for Thanksgiving. Well, it's always nice to have a house full of young people, Mrs. Johnson said. If the weather's clear, they can spend the afternoon outside playing games. Oh, the children will have a marvelous time, Bess agreed. Really, we all will. It's just so many people now. I don't know where I'm going to put everyone. I wonder if I should order another turkey from Albers. Well, that's a good idea, Mrs. Johnson agreed. Better too much than not enough. You can do a lot with leftover turkey. You ever make turkey soup? Well, save the bones in the icebox, and I'll show you how I do my soup when I come in on Friday. What are your Thanksgiving plans? Bess asked, getting up from the kitchen table. Are you having family for dinner? Oh, we're having homecoming at my church, Mrs. Johnson told her. Usually we have it earlier in the fall, but Pastor Stackhouse moved it to Thanksgiving this year because so many of our young people have gone to Cincinnati and Columbus. My son Robert works in a rubber plant up in Akron, but he'll make it down for the day. Bess crossed the kitchen to retrieve her writing tablet from a drawer. I'm sorry, I don't know what homecoming is. We don't have that at my church. That's pretty much what it sounds like, a time for folks who've gone away to come back to their church home, Mrs. Johnson explained. We usually have ours in September, because that's the anniversary of when St. Joseph's AME was founded. Homecoming's mostly an excuse to visit with folks and wear a new hat. There'll be preaching and singing, of course, but the big event is always dinner. Every woman brings her best dish, and the pies alone will feed an army. It sounds wonderful, Bess said, returning to the table with pencil and paper. What will you bring? Chicken and dumplings, probably. I've got my eye on one of my hens. She's an old girl, but a long stewing will take care of that tough meat. Bill might like chicken and dumplings. Maybe you can give me your recipe for that, too. It's easy as can be, Mrs. Johnson assured her, drying her hands on her apron. Well, I'm done with these dishes. I'm going to get the sheets off the bed and start the wash, unless there's something else you'd rather me do first. No, we need to take advantage of the sunny day and hang everything outside. I'll help you when you're ready. The sheets are always so unruly when you try to get them on the line. A moment later, Mrs. Johnson's footsteps sounded on the stairs, and Bess turned to her list making. Should she order a 15-pound turkey? But surely 2 10-pound turkeys would be enough for 13 people. After all, there'd be other things to eat. She was making chestnut stuffing, cranberry sauce, corn pudding, baked onions, and Duchess potatoes, and there would be cake and pie for dessert. Perhaps Mrs. Johnson had a good pie recipe she could share. She scribbled pies, Mrs. Johnson, on her pad, and then put down her pencil. To think she'd resisted the idea of hiring a housekeeper when Bill first suggested it. Now she couldn't imagine life without Mrs. Johnson. It wasn't that she needed the help. It was just so awfully nice to have another woman around the house to discuss things with. Mrs. Johnson had come to work for Bess at the beginning of August, shortly after Bill had arrived home one afternoon in late July to find Bess weeping in the little closet of a room off the entryway. She'd set out that morning full of vim and vigor, with plans to keep the girls occupied while she sewed their new school dresses, and, yes, perhaps made a little progress on her cat's cradle quilt, which she hadn't had a minute to work on all week. She'd get them started on a cooking project first thing after breakfast. 11-year-old Annie could help the two younger girls make a batch of ginger snaps, a family favorite, and then walk them over to the park where they could play until lunch. After lunch, Jane and Helen would have rest time in their rooms, and Annie could go visit Molly, who lived a few houses down the street. When Annie returned, perhaps the girls could have a tea party and then play in the backyard until Bill got home. Things had fallen apart almost immediately. Moments after Bess had set out the ingredients for the ginger snaps, Molly had stopped by to invite Annie on an outing with her family. They were off for a morning at Parsons Pond, and Bess couldn't bring herself to say no. Of course, the younger girls had begged to go along, but they hadn't been invited, and Bess wouldn't let them invite themselves. Helen, in particular, had railed at the injustice of it all and spent the morning making messes in protest. She baked mud pies on the porch, put on a play in the living room that involved multiple costume changes and props gathered from all over the house, and pounded out a chaotic symphony on the piano. She'd exhausted herself by lunch, but it was the kind of exhaustion that seemed to resist sleep, so there was no naptime reprieve. Jane, being Jane, took a book and a blanket out to the backyard and spent the morning reading. After lunch, she asked if she could go over to Matthew's house to play catch, and Bess said she didn't see why not. As it so happened, Matthew's mother had a headache and couldn't tolerate any noise that afternoon, and minutes later, Jane and Matthew marched into the kitchen to do a science experiment that they promised would only involve soap and water. Annie came back mid-afternoon, sunburned and soggy. Molly's brother had pushed her in the pond, and headed straight for the tub, leaving a trail of sodden clothing behind her. Helen decided to make a game of bumping down the stairs 100 times on her bottom, and Bess took this opportunity to pick up her sewing. But just as she was threading her needle, the smell of smoke came from the kitchen, where it turned out that Jane and Matthew had decided to boil their soap and water concoction, setting a dish towel on fire in the process. Soon after, Helen's bumping stopped and her howling began. She thought it might be fun to somersault down the last 2 steps. Another experiment gone awry. Bess didn't actually break down until 5 minutes later, when Annie yelled from upstairs that the toilet was overflowing because someone had stuffed a washcloth in it. She sent Matthew home, sent the girls to their rooms, threw towels on the bathroom floor, and then sequestered herself in her little hideaway, which is where Bill found her when he arrived home from work. "Bessie?" he'd asked, giving her a gentle pat on the back. "Are you ill?" Bess couldn't bring herself to speak. She was afraid if she opened her mouth, she'd begin to wail. How had her beautifully planned day gone so wrong? How had this happened? The mess, the mayhem, the children run amok. Did you burn dinner? I smell smoke, Bill said. Shall I take us all out to Linwood's to eat? Jane burned the bubbles, was all Bess managed to sob. But Bill, peering out into the living room, where costumes and props were strewn about and the sofa cushions lay haphazardly across the floor, got the gist of the situation. Summer is hard, he said sympathetically. Maybe you need help. Bess sniffed and looked up at him. Like a mother's helper? She wasn't sure she liked that idea. All she'd read in the magazines was how modern women no longer hired household help. Why would they, with all of their time-saving appliances and devices? No, with proper household management, today's woman could do it all by herself. Or a housekeeper who might also help with the children until they go back to school, Bill suggested. It would free you up for all sorts of things. That seems excessive, Bess told him, wiping her eyes. I can take care of the house on my own, and the children, too. Bill didn't bother pointing out all the evidence to the contrary. Instead, he shrugged and said, But why should you? We can afford to have someone come in. Listen, I was talking with Fred Ames the other day, and he mentioned they just hired a woman from Lincoln Heights that they're quite happy with. Maybe she has a few hours she could spend over here. That woman turned out to be Ruth Timmons, who didn't need the work, but had a sister who did, and after Bill insisted that Bess at least interview her, it was arranged for Mrs. Dorothy Johnson to come the following Monday morning. Bess, wanting to prove that she really didn't need any help, had spent the weekend cleaning, and an hour before Mrs. Johnson's arrival, she sent the girls out into the yard so they couldn't undermine all of her hard work. Then she waited in the living room with some mending, wanting to present the picture of an industrious housewife when Mrs. Johnson arrived at 10 o'clock. 10 minutes before the hour, the kitchen door burst open and a tidal wave of small children rolled in. Bess rose quickly, yelling, Out! Out! But by the time she reached the kitchen, the damage was done. In a matter of a minute, Helen and her friends, the twins, Judy and Joan, had brought a garden's worth of dirt inside with them. Not dirt, mud. Mud! What would Mrs. Johnson think? Well, she'd think Bess was a slattern. That's what she'd think, Bess told herself as she yanked her apron off its hook and grabbed the mop bucket. How on earth would she get up all of this mess before the housekeeper arrived? The answer was simple. She wouldn't. At 10 o'clock on the dot, Annie opened the kitchen door and called, Mother, she's here! Bess, still on her knees, a sponge in her hand, looked up to see a tall, dignified-looking colored woman at the doorway, with what seemed to Bess a mildly horrified expression on her face. I'm so sorry, Bess told her. The girls just ran through the house like a mudslide. Why don't you let me get that? Mrs. Johnson offered, putting her purse on the counter. But Bess shook her head. The woman was wearing a lovely pink and purple floral dress. A house dress, yes, but much too nice for scrubbing floors. No, no, Bess said, getting to her feet. I've almost finished. Why don't you go through to the living room and make yourself at home while I take off this apron and run a comb through my hair? Can I make you a cup of coffee? Oh, no thank you, Mrs. Wilcox, Mrs. Johnson said. Here, at least let me throw that bucket of muddy water out. What do? Tip it off the back porch into the garden? I'd like to throw it on those children, Bess said, and then clapped her hand over her mouth. Oh, that sounded awful. What you must think of me. Mrs. Johnson gave Bess a gentle smile. I think you're a woman in need of a housekeeper. She reached for her purse and pulled out a folded sheet of paper. I have my references right here. I was working for a real nice lady over on Pleasant Street, Mrs. Overmeyer. But now her daughter's moved in with her and is trying to cut back on costs. Mrs. Overmeyer said she'd be glad to vouch for my abilities. Bess took the paper from her. I'm sure you'd do a fine job, she said. I talked with Mrs. Ames and she says she's very happy with your sister. Ruth does good work, Mrs. Johnson agreed. Not as good as me, but close. Now, you go fix your hair, and I'll go sling this water on the children. The women looked at each other and smiled. Maybe Bess didn't need help, but she wouldn't mind having someone around who made her laugh from time to time. "When can you start, Mrs. Johnson?" Bess asked. And Mrs. Johnson, picking up the bucket, said, "I believe right this very minute works for me, if it works for you." Funny, Bess hadn't realized how tight her chest had been up to this very moment. Suddenly she felt like she could breathe again for the first time in weeks. "Oh, it works for me, Mrs. Johnson," she said. "It most certainly works for me." They had quickly settled into a comfortable routine. Mrs. Johnson arrived every morning promptly at 9 a.m., hung her coat and purse on a hook by the door, pulled her apron out of her bag, and began washing the breakfast dishes. Bess sat at the kitchen table and finished her coffee as she wrote out her list of errands, checking with Mrs. Johnson about what supplies needed restocking and what jobs she planned on tackling that day. Bess tried to keep Monday mornings more or less free so she could help Mrs. Johnson with the laundry, but other mornings she was often out until noon, running errands and attending her various club meetings. While they were still out of school, Mrs. Johnson kept an eye on the girls, who were remarkably well behaved for her. "Sometimes I think I do twice as much around the house now that you're here," Bess said one afternoon in mid-September. "Normally, when the girls are at school, I spend my afternoons working on a quilt. But now I feel awfully lazy stitching away while you're upstairs cleaning the bathroom." "You're paying me to clean the bathroom," Mrs. Johnson pointed out. "You shouldn't feel bad about me doing my job. But if it makes you feel better, we could sew together after you have your lunch. I take a break then anyway, and if I'm working on one of my quilts, then you won't feel guilty about working on one of yours." "I didn't know you made quilts," Bess exclaimed. "How marvelous! We can have our own little lunchtime sewing bee." "I'll bring my sewing things tomorrow," Mrs. Johnson had promised, and from then on the two women sewed together every day, except on Thursdays, when Mrs. Johnson left at noon. They chatted about patterns and asked each other's advice, and in no time at all, Bess decided that hiring a housekeeper was the best decision she'd ever made, even if she wasn't convinced she really needed the help. Thinking about her parents' visit as she drove to Albert's Grocery, Bess's grip tightened on the steering wheel. She'd been planning Thanksgiving dinner as a casual affair. Really, how could it be otherwise with her three energetic nephews in attendance? Besides, informality was a Wilcox family tradition. Usually Thanksgiving dinner was at Frank and Wilma's over on Orange Street, a large rambling barn of a house with plenty of room for the entire extended family, plus a large array of friends and strays. Some years you might find a seat at the dining room table, while other years you could be sitting on the sofa tucked in between Great Aunt Lucille and somebody's six-year-old nephew who might, or might not, spill gravy all over your shoes. Bess had been planning on a smaller version of this, but she knew it wouldn't pass muster with her mother. Celeste Putnam would never consider inviting people to her home and having them balance dinner plates on their laps. She'd entertained frequently at the Trinity Church Rectory in Columbus, where Bess had grown up, and her table was always magical, lit with flickering candles, the silver twinkling, the Irish linen cloth starched within an inch of its life. Bess could still see her mother moving like a dancer through the house an hour before company arrived, pausing to examine the forks for spots and making sure all of the water glasses were filled before she went up to dress. And oh, those dresses! If you hadn't already known that Reverend Putnam's wife had a sizable trust fund, you'd be sure of it after you'd seen one of her dinner gowns, satins trimmed with velvet and lace and embroidered with metallic cord. Bess had been planning on wearing something a bit less grand, a pretty afternoon dress with a dropped waist and a pleat down the center of the skirt that she'd just finished sewing over the weekend. It was nicer than every day, but she could put an apron over it without feeling ridiculous. Mother would hate the dress, of course, and go rustling through Bess's wardrobe in search of something more appropriate. There was no getting around it, Bess thought, as she pulled into a parking space two doors down from the grocery. Mother coming to Thanksgiving meant more work for Bess, more washing and scrubbing, more ironing and polishing, more place settings and platters. It also meant more commentary on Bess's performance, which was sure to be less than adequate in her mother's eyes. Her mother would use this as an opportunity to fuss at Bess for not being practiced in the womanly art of entertaining. One of your roles as a wife is to support your husband by having dinner parties for his work colleagues, she told Bess on more than one occasion. And while Bess supposed she had a point, Bill had never been enthusiastic about the idea. His home was his castle, he liked to say, and he preferred to keep the drawbridge up. Bess had to admit that she did, too. Oh, she enjoyed her club meetings and church gatherings, but when she was home, she wanted it to be just family. And when her duties were done for the day, Bess liked to work on her quilts. Some of her favorite moments were in the evenings, she and Bill on the sofa, he with his paper, she with her stitching, the girls in bed. Winter nights, Bill would build a fire, and it was cozy in a way that Bess's childhood home never was. Stepping out of the car, Bess wondered if the library had any books on entertaining a crowd in style. Perhaps it wasn't too late to learn. In spite of the fact that Albers was stocked with hundreds of different items, including a case of fragrant fresh produce and a shelf of bread delivered that morning, it was the smell of freshly ground coffee that met Bess at the door and seemed to follow her as she traveled around the shop. Wishing she had a cup in hand, there was little Bess enjoyed more than a good cup of coffee. She drew up to the meat counter with its collection of plucked chickens and thought of the bird Mrs. Johnson would be transforming into a stew for her church's Thanksgiving dinner. What a marvelous idea to have everyone bring a dish and share it. Bess imagined the long tables filled with platters of roast turkey and bowls of mashed potatoes and creamed corn, the fat yeast rolls and the mouth-watering display of pies. It seemed more in the spirit of the holiday than a fancy table set with silver, she thought. "Good morning, Bess," a voice called from across the store, and Bess turned to see Elizabeth Snyder, her arm in a sling, walking in her direction. "Molly told me she's invited herself over for Thanksgiving, and I wanted to thank you. You're so kind to have her, and Wallace, too." "Oh, it's always a pleasure to have Molly," Bess said. "She's like one of the family. How are you feeling?" "I'm frustrated that I have to wear this cast for 6 more weeks," Elizabeth complained. "Honestly, I can't believe I made it through my entire childhood without so much as a sprained ankle, and here I am, 35 years old, with a broken arm." "And what a time of year to break it," Bess commiserated. "If you need help with your Christmas shopping, just let me know." "I hadn't even thought about that. Maybe I'll have a tea party and invite all of my friends over to wrap presents for me." "Of course they'd have to make the tea as well." Elizabeth paused and gave Bess an uncertain smile before continuing. "Listen, Bess, I hate to do this, but, well, you see, Ed and I were going to have Thanksgiving dinner with the Kempners, but now they've both come down with some awful bug. Worse luck, my brother and his wife were coming with us, and now they don't have any place to go. I don't suppose you could expand your table to include 4 more, could you? There's just no way I can serve a dinner this year, much less clean the house for company. I'll bring a turkey if that sweetens the deal for you. I'd ordered a 15-pounder a month ago, before I broke my arm." 4 more people? Where would she put them? On the back porch? Bess considered this, not putting the Snyders on the back porch, but perhaps some of the children, if the weather wasn't too bad. She could bill it as a Thanksgiving picnic. However she sorted things out, she knew she couldn't say no. "The more the merrier has always been my motto," Bess told her friend, "and if you're bringing a turkey, I won't have to order another one," which was what I was just about to do. "Oh, didn't you see?" Elizabeth pointed to a sign on the wall. "They stopped taking orders for turkeys last week." "Then I simply insist you and the others come for dinner, or else we won't have enough food," Bess said with a laugh, sounding more cheerful than she felt. 17 for Thanksgiving. Perhaps another 20-pound bag of potatoes was in order. And a bigger house. "Bess, you're a dear," Elizabeth said. "If there's anything else I can bring, let me know. I'm not much for baking right now, but Molly's not bad in the kitchen." "No, no, it's fine. I'll manage," Bess told her. "If you're sure," Elizabeth said, turning to go. "But really, if there's anything, I'll let you know Bess said, knowing she wouldn't. Bess could handle this on her own, and yes, it was going to take a lot of work, but Bess Wilcox was a modern woman, and she could do what needed to be done. "Do you have any friends that play bridge or cards of some sort?" Mrs. Johnson asked on Tuesday as she hung her apron on the hook by the door after lunch. The two women had spent lunch discussing where Bess might seat her 17 guests, and now they were adjourning to the living room for their sewing time. "Because my sister Ruth has card parties sometimes and has these tables she pulls down from the attic, the kind that you can fold the legs up when you're not using them." "I was hoping for a more elegant solution," Bess said, as they made their way to the living room, where their sewing baskets awaited them. "But I guess card tables are better than having people sit on the floor, and Wilma's sure to have some. I could drive over this afternoon and pick them up. The question is, where would I put them?" "Well, you've got a fairly large front hallway," Mrs. Johnson pointed out. "You could probably put two tables there, maybe three. That's where the children could eat." "Almost half of the group will be children," Bess said. "My girls, Frank's boys, Molly and her brother. That's eight. If we could fit all of them in the front hall, my seating problems would practically be solved. I'd need linens for the tables, of course." "We'll use some old quilts," Mrs. Johnson suggested, sitting down in the chair next to the fireplace, "ones you don't mind getting spilled on." "Quilts? Oh, I don't know. I can't imagine what my mother would think of quilt-covered tables. She doesn't much care for quilts, to be honest." Mrs. Johnson gave Bess a surprised look. "How'd you come to love them so much, then?" "My father's mother," Bess told her. "I'm not sure I ever saw her without a needle in her hand, even at the dinner table." "If your mother doesn't like quilts on the table, I can't imagine she liked quilting at the table." "Oh, she did not." Bess laughed at the memory. "But as far as my father was concerned, Grandmother Violet could do no wrong. If she wanted to stitch at the dinner table, why, that was perfectly fine with him." Mrs. Johnson rummaged in her basket and pulled out an appliqué block. "Is your grandmother the one who taught you how to quilt?" Bess nodded. "She sat me down when I was 5 years old and said, 'Bessie, I'm going to introduce you to your favorite thing in life.' And she was right. Now, how's that block of yours coming along?" "Oh, I'm having the worst time with this," Mrs. Johnson said, holding up her sewing. "I love the floral leaf design, but the vines are so thin, it's hard to turn the edges under so I can stitch them down." "Have you thought about not turning the edges under? A friend of mine has a neat trick where she leaves the edges exposed but paints them with thin glue so they don't fray." "Just uses a brush?" Bess nodded, pulling out her own sewing. "It seems to work, although I suppose if you wanted to hand a quilt down through the generations, it might not be the best way. You know, you could always recut your vine so you have more fabric to turn under." "I think that's what I'm going to do. I really wanted them to be delicate, but it might not be practical." "I bet you still can if you press carefully," Bess said as she threaded a needle. "Did you get a chance to work on your blocks last night?" Mrs. Johnson asked. "You only had six left when we finished up yesterday." "No, there was too much planning to do for Thursday." Bess began assembling the pieces of a block on the coffee table. "I just love a block that uses up scraps, don't you?" "Well, that ocean wave block will use up every scrap in your basket," Mrs. Johnson agreed. "I do find a scrappy quilt highly satisfying." "I thought you preferred appliqué. At least you always seem to be working on an appliqué." "I've been in the mood for appliqué for a while, that's true. But pretty soon my mood will change, and I won't want to do anything but piece." The two women settled into their sewing. Bess always enjoyed how they drifted in and out of a conversation, a thought surfacing for a moment. "Well, I was thinking you could do a pot roast for dinner tomorrow night." And then it was quiet again until another thought needed to be expressed. "Don't let me forget to show you the recipe I found for baked squash in last month's Good Housekeeping." Sometimes their spoken thoughts bloomed into full-fledged conversations, but most of their talk was of the elliptical sort, sentences followed by comfortable silences. "Somebody's coming up the walk," Mrs. Johnson announced after a long stretch of quiet stitching. "I can't tell who it is, though." Bess turned to look out the window and saw a bent figure in black slowly making its way to the door. Oh, that's Mrs. Corrigan. I think I've mentioned her to you. She and her two sisters all live together in that old Victorian on the corner, the one that's falling down a few bricks at a time. It's their family home, and one of the sisters, Priscilla, I believe, has lived there her entire life, never married. The other two moved in after they were widowed. All three of them are as old as the hills. A moment later, the bell rang, and Bess put down her sewing. The only time Mrs. Corrigan stops by is to ask a favor from Bill. Last week she wanted him to clean out the gutters, which of course he did, even though those women could easily afford to hire someone. Maybe it's a comfort to them that their neighbors help them out in times of need, Mrs. Johnson offered mildly. Or maybe they're cheap, Bess retorted, which, by the way, they are. I've come to ask what time dinner is on Thursday, Mrs. Corrigan announced as soon as Bess opened the door. I hope you're not one of those people who serves Thanksgiving dinner at noon. Why, I've barely digested my breakfast by noon. Bess took a step back. What was happening here? Why did Mrs. Corrigan seem to be speaking in a strange tongue, with words that made no sense? I'm sorry, she stammered. I'm not sure I understand. If you eat a large breakfast, which I make a point of doing each and every morning, it's proper to take a light lunch around 1 o'clock and not a minute before, Mrs. Corrigan explained. Dinner is at 7, although I understand that some hostesses often choose to serve holiday meals earlier. Yes, that's often the case, Bess agreed, wondering why she felt a little dizzy. So, what time will you be serving dinner on Thursday? Mrs. Corrigan repeated. My sisters and I abhor being late. It shows such a disregard to one's hostess. And I am your hostess? I assume that you are, given it was your husband who invited us to Thanksgiving dinner. Bess grabbed the door to steady herself. My husband did what? He invited us to dinner on Thursday, Mrs. Corrigan said, a touch of impatience creeping into her voice. Mr. Wilcox stopped by this morning on his way to work because he'd noticed one of our shutters had come off its hinges, and while he was up on the ladder putting it to rights, he asked my sister Priscilla what our Thanksgiving plans were. Priscilla was obliged to report that we had none. We've been so distraught over the loss of our whiskers, we just never got around to ordering a turkey or inviting anyone over. Your whiskers? Is that a cat? Yes, dear, Whiskers is our cat. Or perhaps I should say he was our cat. He ran off last month, and we fear he's gone for good. In any event, Mr. Wilcox said we simply must come to Thanksgiving at your house, but he neglected to tell us what time dinner was being served. 4, Bess reported in a weak voice. Dinner is at 4. I'm afraid quarters will be tight. We'll come at 3, then, Mrs. Corrigan said. We can't digest properly if we're not seated comfortably. With that, the old woman turned on her heel and began her slow march back down the walk. Bess returned to the living room. I suppose you heard that. Bill invited the 3 little old ladies from down the street to Thanksgiving dinner. Mrs. Johnson nodded. So it's 20 for Thanksgiving, then. You might need to borrow more than 3 tables. I might need to rent out a banquet hall, Bess said, falling dramatically onto the sofa. But really, it will be fine. 3 more people, 3 more table settings, 3 more napkin rings, 3 more napkins, 3 more water goblets I'll need to borrow from someone before Thursday. Bess put her head in her hands. Oh, Mrs. Johnson, this is going to be a disaster. Much to Bess's surprise, Mrs. Johnson started to laugh. Oh, I could have told you that yesterday, even before Mr. Wilcox invited your neighbors. Not that it has to be a disaster, but you sure are making it one. What do you mean? Bess said, looking up. How is this my fault? Mrs. Johnson gave Bess a level look. Can I speak frankly, Mrs. Wilcox? When Bess nodded, she continued, "You know what I noticed about you that first day I walked into this house?" Bess steeled herself for what Mrs. Johnson might say. "That I had a muddy kitchen floor?" "No. I noticed when I offered to help you clean that floor, you wouldn't let me, even though I'd come for a housekeeping job. I also noticed that your children were outside playing and not inside scrubbing, even though they made the mess. I hope you don't mind me saying so, Mrs. Wilcox, but you need to stop acting like you can do everything yourself and put more people to work in this house."
"But everyone is already so busy," Bess offered lamely, "and the children wouldn't know how to help."
Mrs. Johnson pressed her lips together as though she were trying not to say what she was about to say. "Forgive me for being blunt, but how are your girls going to learn to take care of a house if you don't teach them? You need to show Annie how to iron the table linens and teach Jane how to bake a pie. Helen, well, she can sweep the front walk, can't she? She's not too little to do that."
I suppose not," Bess reluctantly admitted.
"On top of that," Mrs. Johnson continued, seeming to pick up steam, "you need to ask that old lady who just knocked on the door to bring some rolls. And why should you drive over to your brother-in-law's house? He can drive over the extra tables Wednesday morning. And when the time comes, I bet your mother can set a table like nobody's business. Why do you think you have to do all of this by yourself?"
Bess thought a moment before replying. I'm not sure, actually. I mean, Wilma, my sister-in-law, the one who usually hosts Thanksgiving, she puts everyone to work the moment they walk in the door. But when I think about my mother entertaining guests, well, it always seems like she did everything herself. Effortlessly, I might add, and she didn't have all the appliances I have, all of the time-saving devices. Well, she didn't even have electricity.
"Your mother did all the cooking, and the setting things up, and cleaning up afterwards, all by herself?" Mrs. Johnson sounded doubtful.
"Well, we had a cook," Bess said, and a housekeeper, and Mother hired someone to serve at her dinners. "Funny, I'd forgotten all of that until just now. All I really remember is my mother flying around the house right before company came, lighting candles and drawing the curtains. It was very dramatic."
"Well, that's probably why your memories are only about your mother and not about the other people behind the scenes. You need to get some behind-the-scenes people, Mrs. Wilcox. Besides just me, that is. Nobody does this sort of thing all by themselves, not even modern women like you."
Maybe you're right. I don't know, but I do know that no matter how many people I get to help, I'll never be able to arrange things to Mother's standards."
"You're not your mother, Mrs. Wilcox. Why can't you have dinner your own way?"
Bess looked down at her lap. "Because I know Mother will fuss at me if I don't do things her way," she admitted. "She'll fuss and complain and make me feel miserable."
"Do I even have to say what I'm thinking, Mrs. Wilcox?"
Bess shook her head emphatically. "No, you don't, Mrs. Johnson. In fact, I'm begging you not to."
"Just as long as you know what I mean," Mrs. Johnson said. "Just as long as you know I mean that you're a grown woman and too old to be under your mother's thumb."
I knew that's what you meant," Bess said with a rueful smile. "You really didn't have to say it."
"But I did," Mrs. Johnson replied, picking up her sewing. "I hope it doesn't bother you, me speaking my mind."
"Why do I think I should probably get used to it?" Bess asked, and, in spite of herself, she began to laugh. If she closed her eyes, Bess could still see the rectory dinner table, everything shimmering in the candlelight, her father at one end in his clerical waistcoat and collar, her mother at the other, dressed like the fashionable Edwardian woman that she was, a tiara in her hair, elegant gloves, a festoon necklace dripping with pearls. Sometimes Bess sat on the bottom step, hidden in the shadows, and eavesdropped on the conversation, which was usually so dull that she dreaded the thought of going to dinner parties when she was finally old enough to be invited to one. Nonetheless, the room itself had always felt magical, Bess thought on Thursday afternoon as she watched her mother lay out the silver on the dining room table. And perhaps Mother had hired help, but she'd been the one in charge, the writer, director, and leading lady of the play, making sure that the show itself came off without a hitch. That's why Bess had announced, as soon as her parents walked through the door yesterday, "Mother, you're in charge of making the dining room absolutely perfect for Thanksgiving dinner." At first, Bess's mother looked taken aback, but she'd warmed to the task quickly and soon had the girls polishing silver while she carefully wrote out name cards. "So if 10 adults will be seated at the dining room table and 12 adults are invited, where will the remaining 2 adults sit?" she'd asked Bess as she considered who should sit next to whom. "Or are you going to try to squeeze them into the dining room, too?" "No, Bill and I are going to eat in the living room. We'll be sitting with Helen and Alfie. That's our youngest nephew." "Oh, Bess," her mother had said, sounding distressed, but that's all she'd said, which in Bess's book was some kind of miracle. Now she waved a butter knife in Bess's direction and reported, "I knew that with a good polishing the silver would come back to life. I just wish you had more settings. That's how many Grandmother gave me, and up to now it's been more than enough by a significant margin." Her mother opened her mouth to speak, but stopped herself and merely nodded. Bess had a feeling that she'd been given direct orders by her husband to behave herself this trip. She'd been remarkably diplomatic since her arrival. It was true that when the girls brought down 3 quilts from the attic this morning and began covering the tables with them, Bess's mother couldn't help but arch a perfectly plucked eyebrow and offer, "Quilts on the tables? You really want to put quilts on the tables, Bessie? I understand this gathering of yours will be somewhat less than strictly traditional, but that doesn't mean you have to resort to make-do linens." Bess hadn't bothered to reply. She was a grown woman, and grown women didn't argue with their mothers about things that had already been decided. After taking another moment to admire her mother's work in the dining room, Bess walked to the front hallway to take one last look at the quilt-covered tables. They'd managed to fit 2 in the hall, and a 3rd had been set up next to the living room window. Bess wasn't sure which quilt was her favorite. Perhaps the turkey in the straw, a pattern as scrappy as the ocean view, but a bit more elegant. All of the quilts were charming in this setting, she thought, warm and cozy, and much more than make-do. She felt sorry for her mother, who, for some reason, didn't understand how a quilt always improved a room. It wasn't just the quilts that made the room beautiful, though. Each table was graced with an arrangement of fall foliage in a vase, beautiful red and yellow leaves that had managed to hold on through the mid-November winds, some still attached to delicate twigs. Annie and Jane had put the arrangements together, and Helen had scattered acorns around the base of each vase to a lovely effect. With such attractive centerpieces, you hardly noticed that the silverware was a hodgepodge, mostly Bess's everyday cutlery, with a few pieces Elizabeth Snyder had loaned for the occasion. And of course, there were the napkins. "Well, everybody needs new linens for a party," Mrs. Johnson had said the morning before, handing Bess a paper bag. "So last night, Ruth and I whipped these up on her Singer. We made 12, more than enough for the card table folks." "Oh, Mrs. Johnson, how kind," Bess had exclaimed as she looked inside the bag to see a stack of napkins made from a red and gold floral print. "And how pretty." The napkins were simplicity themselves, hemmed rectangles that had been folded and pressed, but they were perfect for the season and perfect for the quilt-covered tables. "I think it's the little things that make a dinner nice, don't you?" Mrs. Johnson had said, moving over to the sink to begin the dishes. "They don't even have to be fancy." Well, no one would call this fancy, Bess thought as she surveyed the room. Oh, the dining room table looked lovely, and now Mother was setting out candles, which would make it lovelier still. But the living room and front hall, well, they looked like Bess. They looked like something a modern woman, with the help of her family and friends, would come up with when she was expecting 20 for dinner on very short notice. "Mother, someone's here," Annie called from upstairs. "I just saw them from my window." Bess glanced through the living room curtains to see Mrs. Corrigan and her sisters, all dressed in black, marching up her front walk, each with a covered dish in her hand. Sure enough, it was 3 o'clock. Time, Bess knew as she went to answer the door, for the celebration to begin.
A production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Learn more about the Quilt Fiction podcast online at quiltfiction.com.